Welcome to episode 62 of the Historic Performance Podcast, featuring James Baker, strength and conditioning coach and physical education teacher at St. Peter's Roman Catholic High School in Gloucester, United Kingdom. First, a big thank you to Vald Performance, the sponsors of this podcast episode. In the next couple of weeks, Vald is actually going to be sponsoring a 1 to 2 minute segment that's going to be found in the introduction of this podcast, where I'm going to be asking a question to a particular expert about a particular topic, and it should make it fairly interesting. It's going to be revolving around sports science and strength and conditioning, so be on the lookout for that, and thank you, Vald, for sponsoring that segment. You can find out more about them at valdperformance.com, which is V-A-L-D, performance.com. As you probably noticed in the past couple of weeks, I've really been trying to focus on the high school athlete and long-term athletic development stages. During the past weeks, I have interviewed both Coach Gary Schoenfeld and also Coach Fair. And in that same continuum, I am now going across the pond and interviewing James Baker. James works with a high school population over at St. Peter's Roman Catholic High School. And in this episode, he talks about the 14 to 16 year old age group, or what he calls the development age group. He talks about how he goes about creating an annual program for them with different specific qualities that are focused on different blocks throughout the academic year. He gives a sample session within each of those particular blocks. And then he also talks about how his testing process has evolved and what it currently looks like now. It's a fairly interesting episode. I think people from both the United States and the United Kingdom, as well as others throughout the world, will benefit from this. It's a very important topic because, especially as many strength and conditioning coaches know at the D1 level, sometimes they get athletes that have not been exposed to strength training at all. And it would be great to advance the high school age group and make sure that they're getting what is needed in order to continue to develop both physically and mentally as a student athlete. Hope you enjoy the episode. Let's get started. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Story Performance Podcast. Today I'm really glad to be joined by James Baker. James, how are you doing?
I'm great, thanks James. Really appreciate the invite to come and have a chat this evening.
As you've probably seen the last couple of weeks, I've really been trying to focus on the youth athlete, especially during that adolescent age. And I've invited a couple of guys here in the States, but it's a good privilege to have you on to talk about your work in the UK.
Yeah, thanks very much. I haven't had a chance to listen to the other guys yet, but it's I know of both of them, and I'm looking forward to checking out what they said and learning a lot from them, and hopefully by sharing some of what we're doing over in the UK, you know, we can all contribute to ultimately better outcomes for the young athletes that we're coming into contact with.
James, to start us off, could you just tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey in strength and conditioning?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, my interest in strength and conditioning started out as an athlete. I was fortunate to compete at a high level in a couple of sports. I skied to a high level and had a very forward-thinking ski coach. And there was certain elements of strength and conditioning that were built into that from a young age. We were exposed to doing what I now know is plyometrics and conditioning exercises specific to things like the downhill or the super G stuff that we were more regularly competing in, doing wall sits and all that kind of thing. And even at that stage, I very much enjoyed the challenge and had a desire to want to work hard in the physical stuff as well as the technical stuff. As I say, even though I didn't at that point really recognize that it as strength and conditioning. And then I finished up skiing and got into playing rugby, and I was at a professional rugby academy up to sort of under 19s level at Gloucester Rugby, which is the local professional team in my hometown. And through there, I was exposed to what I guess was the first structured strength and conditioning environment with a guy called Paddy Mortimer, who was the Academy S&C coach at the time. And he taught me the basics, lifting, and taught me some clean and jerk training down at King's Home in the gym in the early mornings. I think Paddy's now on to bigger and better things, working within the EIS. I think at the last time I heard, I think he was doing some stuff with the ski and snowboard guys. So I was fortunate to work with some forward-thinking coaches, and that kind of ignited my interest in training. And then then went on to do a sport and exercise science degree at the University of Gloucestershire. And off the back of that, after a bit of time travelling, I discovered the UKSCA accreditation process and started working with younger athletes probably about 8 years ago now. Again, fortunate to kind of land on my feet with a good mentor locally, with a guy called Ed Archer, and we started working out with some young tennis players actually that were based at the school where I'm working now, and kind of evolved. My journey kind of evolved there. At the same time, I was working as a personal trainer in a local gym, and combining that with my work with Ed, and eventually I managed to get on an internship with a professional rugby club, Bristol Rugby, again with some good people, and from there Ed decided to make the Athlete Academy, which was purely focused around youth strength conditioning and working with schools and clubs with developmental athletes. And I was fortunate to be taken on there as a full-time coach, and helped to develop and build that business, where we were working with a number of schools in the Gloucestershire area. And as I've mentioned, Ed was a fantastic mentor that kind of set the bar extremely high for qualities as an S&C coach. And it was from there that the opportunity really evolved to start working in the school where I'm based in now, where I've actually trained to be a PE teacher, and working within what we now recognise as the Elite Performance Pathway, as it's a long-term athlete development system. So that's kind of my journey as a coach. And then alongside that, I've got some other business interests in terms of running a company called Proformance. I co-direct with Mike Young, and we run various strength and conditioning continuing education events and various other bits and pieces, which keeps us busy on the side.
James, as you mentioned, you're currently with St. Peter's Roman Catholic High School, where you're mainly working with year 7 through 13. Could you tell us how that process evolved? What made you want to work exclusively with one high school when before you're working with multiple different high schools in the Gloucestershire area?
Sure. I mean, through the Athlete Academy, I mean, it was a great experience, and gave me an opportunity to coach with a lot of different young athletes from different sports in different schools, which if you ever work in schools, you'll learn that there's a different culture and ethos in each and every one of them. The major challenges that we found when we were doing those programs was that funding was limited. Schools, particularly the state schools, don't have a huge pot of funding to be able to pay for a full-time S&C coach. So at the time, I think we were in 12 different, we ran about 12 different programs, but none of them really probably made it past 20 weeks. I think maybe there is one, I think Ed possibly is still working with one of them now, maybe a couple of others that I'm not aware of, but all of them were, all the programs were fairly short term because the funding just wasn't there to support the program long term, or numbers would fluctuate up and down and the programs wouldn't be financially viable. And ultimately, that impacted on what we were able to deliver, and the development process with a young athlete is such a long period of time that, you know, you need to be there every step of the way to provide that guidance and structure. So the opportunity, one of those 12 programs was at St. Peter's Roman Catholic High School in Gloucester. And, you know, from talking to the head of PE there, I was actually a former student at the school, so they were familiar with me, and I'd been doing some work in and around in my own private business with Proformance from a coaching perspective. And the opportunity arose then to go in as a PE teacher and train. The advantages I see as being from within is you just get an unrivaled consistency when you're in the school environment. You know, externally at the private facility, you know, we're battling between 4 and 8 p.m., which is the kind of key time people train. I'm sure the same in the US. You know, when you're external, you know, that time is just filled for young athletes with sports training or fixtures. You know, one young lad that I trained, we used to train on a Monday evening. The slot that would fit most weeks, but then there was, you know, Tuesday night he was with his local club, Wednesday night he was with the county, Thursday he'd have a game with the school. You know, it just all week there would be something on. So, you know, the consistency just wasn't there working privately. Whereas, you know, we're on site at school, you know, the athletes are on site for 6 to 7 hours a day, 5 days a week, and then they're there for between 5 and 7 years, depending on whether they stay with us for their sixth form education, which is years 12 and 13, sort of 17, 18 years old. And for me, I always just looked at that as being an ideal environment to build a long-term program, or the sort of long-term program that I was convinced would produce the results that we need, and that's to produce high-level athletes from a physical perspective as well as a technical and tactical perspective, because that side of it is done very well in PE, technical, tactical, you know, brilliant at developing skills, but, you know, there's definitely a gap on the physical side. So, you know, we wanted to put this in place ultimately to give those skilled athletes a better chance of succeeding. And as I say, I think the school environment is an ideal opportunity to be able to do that.
James, one thing that you mentioned before was the long-term athlete development system, or elite performance pathway, as you call it, at the high school that you're currently working at, which is St. Peter's.
Yeah.
And I was hoping if you could talk a little bit more about the elite performance pathway and the philosophy behind it.
Sure. So ultimately what we're trying to do with it is provide a physical training pathway that gets them as close as possible to, you know, elite physical performance across a number of years. And we want, you know, kids to have positive outcomes from being on the pathway. You know, something that we recognize is that we've got some phenomenally talented kids and producing some phenomenally talented kids in various sports, but compared to kids when I was at school and prior to that, you know, physically they're not as well put together. You know, they're not as generally, you know, they're not as physically capable, you know, albeit due to the changes in the modern lifestyle, the more sedentary sitting time that young people have now with the increasing technological devices and other things, you know, Xbox, PlayStation, that sort of thing. So we wanted to make sure that, you know, we're giving them the best chance physically, or, you know, bringing their physical capacities up to match their skill levels, rather than, you know, you send them, these highly skilled athletes, to a professional training environment without a training history, and, you know, they're in the deep end. And they've got a lot to learn. And that was the situation I found myself in when I went to Gloucester Rugby Academy. Was, you know, physically I was nowhere near where a lot of the boys were, and they, you know, they've been doing more, and you know, I had to learn all the training skills in order to even begin to train and get somewhere close. So, you know, by providing a training environment that does that now, hopefully we can help more of our pupils be successful. And the philosophy we've kind of worked with that is, I spent a lot of time talking to coaches at various levels, and obviously my experience working at various levels, and kind of identified, you know, what we think is, you know, required from a training skill perspective, and then what sort of physical capacities they should be generally at by the time they're ready to enter an academy. And then we've worked backwards from that to build a system from the ground up. So scaled back where we think they should be at 18, where we think they should be at 14, where we, you know, think they should be by the end of the first year with us when they're 12, 13 years old. And then helping them to understand through our training system that, you know, they're in control of getting better, and helping them to understand the things that they need to do in order to be an elite performer in the long term, and you know, the fundamental training things that they need to do. And then, you know, I see it as my job to then create a learning environment that motivates them and challenges them to be better. And one of the philosophies as well that I try and think about is, you know, I've got two children of my own, and would I want them to be part of this program? Would I be happy for them to be training in that environment? Is it somewhere where I'd want them to be? You know, somewhere that they could flourish. And, you know, I think we're working towards achieving that quite well at the moment.
James, I know you had a fantastic podcast with Matt Dickens probably about 2 months ago now.
Yeah.
And you talked there a little bit about the younger age group. So I was hoping that we could talk about some of the older age groups and 14 to 16 years of age.
Yeah.
How do you structure training for these age groups? And maybe we can go for 14, 15, and 16 over the academic year. You know, what are you trying to accomplish with each specific one?
Sure. I mean, at that age group, 14 to 16, it kind of depends on their entry point and their training history. I see the training history as one of the most critical factors over sort of other things, and where are they at. So, you know, at 14 to 16, I mean, if we take this year's cohort as an example that came in at the beginning of the year, all 14 years old, what we'd call year 10, we had probably, I think we took in 18 to the group, nine or 10 of which had 2 years of training already within the EPP in what we call the foundation stage. They demonstrated competence in, you know, the basic movements under body weight. They've, you know, performed a wide range of jumping activities, jump, leap, hop, step, learned various basic what term sports generic movement skills, you know, cutting, accelerate, decelerate, lateral movements, various transitions. So that they were already fairly well versed, whereas the other 9 or 10, I can't exactly remember the split, were coming in with no training history. So we had to start them in two different places, and, you know, we were able to do that. We have we had a great group of interns this year who were with us from the back end of March 2015, so we kind of had to manage those groups. So we had new to the system guys entered into the foundation program, which is, for those who maybe haven't listened to that podcast, just the foundation program is basically about developing strength versus body weight through the basic movement pattern: squat, lunge, push, pull, hinge, rotate, brace, and making sure that they can perform those things, establish some volume in those movements against body weight, start then transitioning to low load work before they enter, you know, more traditional means of strength training, and also tackling any sort of movement problems. You know, if they're lacking flexibility or mobility, you know, fixing it up at that point, being able to allow them to get into the shapes that we need them to in order to get strong safely. The most effective work done then when they move to the traditional barbell and dumbbell training. So once they passed out of that system, what we'd call our athlete development phase, which is where ideally the 14 to 16 year olds would be when they get to us and foundation stuff's taken care of. I mean, across the academic year, I guess the challenge that we face as youth strength and conditioning coaches, even if we've got the luxury of, you know, the time that we've got the kids at school, you know, our time, we're still competing for time with other things. So if we look at the youth physical development model by Roger Lloyd and John Oliver, you know, look at the vertical alignment through the ages, and it's saying that we need to be developing strength, power, speed, agility as our priorities at that age group, towards the latter part where relevant hypertrophy becomes a more significant factor if it's appropriate for the to a degree that's appropriate for the sport. And at a lesser priority, you've got sort of endurance and metabolic conditioning. So what we try and do is rotate the emphasis. We have the primary emphasis, and something that's a constant at this age group for us, is strength training. You know, they're strength training year round. And then we have a kind of rotational emphasis where we bring in power, speed, and agility at different points throughout the academic year. And we really just use the confines of the school year. So each term will have a theme. So we start the year as strength and jump training, reintroduce some basic jumps. We then begin to build in some acceleration work. And then as we build these components in, we then retain them. So we're pretty much training all those things then all year round. But the percentage of time or training allocated to them varies then depending on the athletes, the needs, or the, you know, we try and group them into buckets, put them with people with similar needs and begin to address the stuff that they require, and we can program a little bit more effectively that way. The next bit that we build in after sort of the acceleration work, we do multi-directional speed and agility. We've built a curriculum of basic sports. What I think quite a nice way to sum them up is the sports generic movement patterns. We make sure that they can perform all of those things under closed and progressively open and reactive conditions. Later in the year, as the facilities allow and the open spaces dry up, as I'm sure you're aware, weather in England is not conducive to being outside and sprinting all year round. So as things warm up, we then move into a block of maximal velocity work, and those things would be composed of technical sprint drills and longer distance sprinting. To be honest, with most of our guys, we do kind of keep the back end of the year available to do sort of start tackling any sort of energy system red flags, but the majority of our guys, to be honest, are playing at a decent level and their energy systems are pretty much up to scratch. So we tend to prioritize the strength, power and speed development. As I say, all those things are constant throughout the academic year, and we just vary the volumes of those things accordingly.
Now that we've talked a little bit about the structure and the way that you have specific blocks based on the terms during the academic year, I think it would be good to kind of go into breaking it down further and having a deeper understanding of this process. So at the beginning of the year, I believe you mentioned you had about 18 new individuals who had around 2 years of training age and had gone through the foundation period. So now they're in the development period. So what does the testing process look like during the development period? How has it evolved over the last 3 years? And I know you mentioned data collection. So what data are you collecting from this testing process? And what are you ultimately trying to accomplish with that data set?
Sure. Okay. So, I mean, as a process at the development stage, this is at present, this is where we really get a much more time with the athletes. So we get 5 hours across a 2-week timetable. We get a two-hour block on an afternoon. And when they enter into that program, they go into a regular testing schedule. So in terms of testing process, we test in September, December, March, and July then before the end of the school year. And we, at the beginning of the year, we only had certain equipment available. So the testing battery we've kind of settled on now is different to what was in September. At the beginning, we had a crazy number of tests. We were what I think is a crazy number of tests now. If I had more time, I'd love to do them all, but we were losing sort of 2 to 3 sessions out testing because of those 18 guys that I mentioned. There's also, they train with the year above them. So there's actually 30 athletes in that session. So to get, I think our tested battery was about 8 or 9 tests. We were testing 3 forms of jump: squat jump, counter movement jump, depth jump. We were doing strength, lower body, upper body strength. We were doing 505, we were doing 10 meter, we were doing 20 meter, we were doing a 1500 meter run for CV test to calculate mass scores. And we were just losing a huge amount of training time, which felt was too much on top of the disruption that we get throughout the year. So we lose a few sessions. We also do lose sessions to fixtures that fall in the week. We lose sessions to exams. We lose sessions to school trips. So what we spent a little bit of time kind of looking and thinking about what were the primary things that we were trying to find out, or the outcomes that we want. And ultimately what we want to know is, are they getting stronger? You know, are the relative strength levels going up? Are they getting faster? Are they jumping higher? Are they more powerful? And we also want to know, assess their, how they're growing and their state of maturation. So we managed to nail it down into 4 physical tests and the anthropometrics. So the testing battery that we've settled on now since December time is height, weight and sitting height, which we use to do the growth and maturation calculations to see whether they are early, late or on time in terms of the development, where they are in relation to peak height velocity. We may need to make adjustments for the training based on those things. We also do a counter movement jump, a 20 meter sprint, a 1500 meter run, and we take rep maxes in strength depending on, and we just use the rep maxes from there. The current rep max range that they're using within their program. So if they're new to it, they might be working at a 10 RM. If they've been in a while, they might be somewhere between 6 and 8. If they are one of the year 11 group that have been in a few years, you know, we're taking maybe a 3 to 5 RM depending on where they are in the cycle. And we're just using a basic formula to estimate 1 RM and expressing that as a relative strength score for the meantime, and just looking for those figures to be moving onwards and upwards. And that's kind of evolved quite a bit from the investment that the school has put into testing equipment. So I mean, at the very beginning, I was pretty set at the start of the program when we started it 3 years ago. It was a lot easier. We only had me and 5 athletes to work with. Our testing battery, we knew it was important to be measuring stuff, but we didn't have the resources to do it that we do now, which is, you know, electronic timing system, contact jump mat, and you know, we've got some other bits and pieces as well, push bands and K-box. So we were basically doing standing broad jump, vertical jump with chalk on the wall, basic running test. We managed to beg, steal and borrow a set of timing lights once or twice a year to get a pre and post sprint score. The school deserves a lot of credit in terms of the investment that they've made, and they've made it easier for us to manage the number of athletes that we've got now, because 30 athletes and a piece of chalk on the wall and climbing up and measuring the distance isn't a great deal of fun, and you lose a lot of training time trying to do it that way, and it's obviously not particularly accurate either. So that's kind of where the the evolution of the testing has gone, but what we were able to demonstrate with the, even with those basic tests, is that these kids were improving, you know, standing broad jump. A few of the guys were jumping nearly 40 centimeters further in a year. And they were, those were the figures that started to turn the heads of the teachers and began to get us some buy-in from other people outside of those of us that were kind of hands-on in the program, in understanding that it was really having a positive impact. And I think we, as I say, we've kind of settled on this basic battery, but then when we've got people that are, we're seeing different things in training, or, you know, we've got some guys that are super strong for that age group, lifting close to sort of 2 times body weight in squat movements and deadlift movements, and some of them in their bench press are at sort of 1.5, and pull-ups with, you know, additional 20 kilos hanging off them, so they're very strong. And then it's kind of looking at, you know, looking at things in a little bit more detail for them. So we'll start to delve into that through the training process. So we'll do some depth jumps, look at their reactive strength scores and ground contact times. We also use the K-box and get eccentric and concentric, the peak powers, and look at the eccentric to concentric ratio and whether there's a deficit there that we need to address. We've got a couple of the guys that are really strong, but eccentrically, they come up poorly on the K-box, so we're making different interventions for those guys with the plyometrics and K-box specifically to build that eccentric capacity. And then we're using stuff as well, like the push bands, getting some velocity measures. Really interesting experiment that we did in the last rep max testing session was that we had push bands, putting them on the athletes, and we were starting to see as to whether they were, how close they really were to that sort of maximum strength score, the maximum strength threshold. It's really interesting to be able to actually show the guys where they're at with their lifting and what they perceive to be a max, you know, in many cases wasn't. And for the guys that were, you know, that we do have athletes within that group that are slightly more load averse than others, and they don't necessarily want to go up in weight, or they don't feel confident to go up in weight, but the push band is a really nice way to actually show them that they've got more in the tank, and that they can load with confidence. It's something I've seen in my own training as well. You know, there's days you go in and you think, now this week I've just come back off holiday, chuck the push band on, did a quick estimated 1RM test with it, and it's like it was as high as I was pre-holiday, and I was like, oh cool, okay, I can go full on. So, you know, they enable us to better educate the athletes in terms of where they are with their lifting, and make sure that what we're prescribing is going to actually have the effect that we want it to, whether that's strength or power orientated.
James, before, when you're talking about how you structure the academic year, you said that there's specific blocks where you're trying to focus on specific qualities. So yeah. I was hoping you could give us maybe a sample session for each specific block. Not necessarily get into exercises, but some of the movement patterns that you're trying to focus on, and maybe some of the basic progressions that you have for speed development and power development, because I feel those are two that sometimes people struggle a little bit more than with strength progressions.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, we have both kind of mapped out for each of those things. It's like a progressive system of levels with various jumping tasks and for power development, plyometrics. We have similar thing for speed. We have a similar thing for agility and a similar thing for strength. So in terms of how the sessions, we tend to, as I said earlier, they're always sprinting. They're always lifting something heavy. That might be heavy and slow, or heavy and fast, or light and fast. And then they're doing some plyometric work. And the structure that we try and follow within the session is that each session they would do a warm-up that would consist of some fundamental movements, maybe some skipping, backward skipping, running. Sometimes we play some tag games and other things to kind of start getting to switch on if they've had a bit of a dull morning in another subject. Sometimes we need to wake them up. So we have a basic warm-up, ramp warm-up structure. They'll do some bodyweight strength work, and then we get them in then to So we try and go speed first. So whether that's acceleration or maximal velocity, we then have a section of plyometrics, which would be sort of 2 to 3 exercises. If they're at a more advanced level of training, then they at the front end of their strength work, they'd have an Olympic lift or loaded power exercise, jump squat, depending on what their technical capacities are. And then they do some strength work. So it follows the sort of fast first and gets heavier and more strength orientated later on. So in an acceleration block of work, that would typically involve ankle stiffness drills. So like ankle march, ankle bound, ankle skip, ball drills, singles and doubles, A march, skip and bound. With some of the more advanced guys, we'd do some resisted, maybe a couple of reps of resisted sprinting, and then some flat out sprinting either through the timing system, which keeps the effort levels high, or we do some competitive sprinting where they're racing against other people, again to keep that intensity cranked up, and then we do some jump based activities. Sometimes the jump work precedes the speed work. It's nice sometimes to have a flow of the direction that we're getting them to produce the force. So sometimes when we go into an acceleration session, we might lead in with some broad jumps or follow with some broad jumps. So we've got that more horizontal displacement. Or when we're in a maximal velocity block, those jump activities might be more vertical in nature. So pogo jumps, depth jumps, if they're at that level. Before we get into the more strength orientated and power stuff, in another cycle, if we move from the acceleration block into the multi-directional speed and agility stuff, what we're hoping to ensure there is that they've got can they basically execute all the basic movement patterns. But what we saw a couple of years ago is that when we spent quite a bit of time breaking those down and coaching, was that when we kind of forgot about the acceleration or sprinting stimulus, and we saw a lot of the testing results after that block that the kids had got slower. So we now, even if we're in a multi-directional speed and agility block where we're focusing on, you know, game related movements, they will still do at the end of that block a low volume of high velocity running. So they'll sprint through the gates at the end of that. But what we're looking for them in the agility block is we're looking to make sure that they can execute, you know, the sports generic movements, cutting, accelerate, decelerate, you know, starting from different positions, straight on, hip turn, directional step. Those, have they got those movement patterns in a closed environment? And then we, within those sessions as well, depending on the kind of stage they're at, there'll be an ever increasing amount of open and reactive work through either simple signals and commands, reacting to those. So it might be a clap or a hand point or something else. Or sometimes we give a more game-like stimulus. So we'll ask them to react to the way that another player's moving or another person's moving, and allow them to start building up an idea of what those various movement patterns that they might encounter look like as they're being initiated, and hopefully they'll be able to identify and react to them quicker within the game. And then we're trying to get that through then into more game specificity at the end of the athlete development stage. So we get a lot of rugby players in Gloucester. So, you know, a lot of our guys are rugby based. So, you know, we'll have them, for example, running linear sprint work, but they'll come in on a curve where they're coming round the back of a ruck or, you know, round the corner to get back into play, or, You know, we'll play tag games with defenders coming from various positions, bulldog type games where they might have an attacker coming straight on, or they might have them coming across to sort of simulate a clever tackle, or we might have them trying to break from close quarters with a defender or coming from the ground. So we'd have those various elements within a movement skill session, but then the flow is very similar to the previous block in that might be a 20 to 30, it maybe sounded quite a lot more as I'm describing it, but that would, the acceleration block or the multi-directional speed block would generally be about 30 minutes worth of work. And then they'd go into, again, as in the other block, they'd go into a plyometric type activity. Again, if it's multi-directional speed, then it's probably more lateral, diagonal in nature. Great activities for them to kind of get the feel of producing forces in those directions. And also, you know, in the beginning we can start to look at what are the mechanics like when they land in those various positions. Are they collapsing at the knee or the ankle? Are they getting into a position where they're likely to get injured? So we can start to assess that. And then, you know, their strength work remains constant pretty much across all the phases. We don't change a lot. The reps change and the load gradually increases, and we have weeks where we unload, but they're pretty much doing a bilateral lower body movement, a squat or a deadlift, a push, a pull. We try and get them in a single leg variation, progressing towards purely single leg squat work. So, you know, sort of things that might go through our bottom-up split squat, into lunge, into rear foot elevated split squat, into step down or step up. And then, as I say, single leg progressions like running men and pistols, that sort of stuff. So we the strength work stays pretty consistent. It allows them to keep a measure on where they're at from a strength perspective. We can track the loads a little bit more accurately, and they start to learn that consistency is king and not changing exercises all the time. We get good results from that, and we do sometimes make some bigger rotations in exercises earlier on in that program, so they learn a wider range of movements. When we're generally doing our heavy stuff, we go with the stuff where we know we're going to get bang for your buck.
James, I mean, it's really been great to hear the way that you've structured things at St. Peter's Roman Catholic High School. The next question that I have is really going to be opinion-based. There's probably not a right or wrong answer to this.
Yeah.
Do you see this type of model extending to other areas or other high schools within the United Kingdom? What is the future that you believe can be in store for physical education in the United Kingdom?
One thing I would say is there's a lot of good guys in the UK pushing forward in schools and doing some great things, and guys that have moved out of the school system who've done some great stuff. So I think there's definitely a growing body of coaches that are, you know, that are working in schools and doing some great work at various establishments. I mean, I think the big thing for me is, you know, we've got the independent or private sector of schools. Strength and conditioning there is definitely growing. You know, they're all many private schools now are employing specialist strength and conditioning coaches in order to keep up with the competition for those fee paying pupils. You know, it's about the package that they can offer. So strength and conditioning there, I think, is booming. You know, there's some fantastic facilities being built in those schools and tremendous budgets being spent on all sorts of technology. I've been told recently that there's a few now with GPS systems in independent schools, which is pretty impressive. But, you know, I think for me, the future of it, really, if you think about the fact that in independent schools, there's only 7% of the young people in our country attend a private school. There's 93% in the state comprehensive or public sector, as you would call it, that are being missed out. You know, if we can get this system that we operate or something similar that is adopted in more schools, then, you know, I'm pretty confident with the results that we've seen. If we can, you know, the quality can be managed with the delivery, you know, we could have some really, really exciting athletes making the step up into professional sport. And, you know, having guys arrive in those environments ready to train and able to cope with training, you know, you'd hope for, you know, some more sporting success. I mean, I think the future for PE in terms of the state schools is, well, you know, just PE in general, probably in all schools, anywhere that you go, you know, you hear that most of what I hear is that it's mostly technical, tactical focus. But I think if we really want to deal with the problems that, you know, have come from the modern lifestyle and the technological advances and the way that, you know, young people live their lives now, then we need to put the physical back into physical education. And, you know, I listened to a superb podcast with Calvin Giles, and core issues is that, you know, I don't think a lot of the teachers would be confident in terms of putting in place a system that brings about those physical changes. You know, there's some superb teachers when it comes to the skill development stuff. But I think we've got a long way to go in terms of teacher education and upskilling people to be able to really, as I say, address the current issues with physical literacy, I guess, is the buzzword. And, you know, ensuring that kids are fit to play sport, you know, not playing sport to get fit, is a lot of them aren't physically ready to cope with the rigors of various activities that we're currently doing in PE. That's my opinion a little bit, but, you know, I think if we can start to properly educate the new teachers that are entering the profession. And we're working on something at the school at the moment where we're looking at a teacher training program with a strength and conditioning specialism to start to put more trained people with the power to influence the general athleticism of pupils in other schools. If we can consistently train teachers in our system and make sure they're well versed by the time that we leave us, hopefully then that we can, you know, we'll start to see a bigger impact in state schools as well.
James, since I'm not from the UK, this might come off as a little bit of a naive question, but
sure.
It seems, based on the statements that you've been saying, that physical education teachers, throughout their education process, they're well versed in terms of skill acquisition and technical, tactical, but they don't really have a great strength and conditioning background. Yeah. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's the case for most.
Beyond that, are there any budgetary challenges when to try to create a similar type program in these state schools? Is it just an education issue with the PE teachers not being well educated, or is also budgetary issues?
No, I think, you know, in a state school, funding's tight a lot of the time. You know, and for us to run the program in a state school, you know, I had to train to be a PE teacher in order to get in full time and run the program. And then the amount of time allocated for me running the program has increased from 5 hours a fortnight to the program, I think, now runs over 25 to 30 hours of lessons built into the timetable. So time is a challenge. Funding's a challenge to begin with. But, you know, I guess there's a lot, you know, teachers can be doing with just body weight, you know, if they understand the principles of what movement should look like and those basic patterns of squat, push, lunge, pull, hinge. You know, there's no reason you can't get started integrating that stuff into warm-ups. You know, the plyometric and basics of jumping, you know, jump, hop, leap, skip, there's no reason why they can't be doing those things and getting started and getting something off the ground. And likewise, learning the basics of sprint drills, you know, a lot of those you just need the technical knowledge of what those movements should look like and how to execute them and how to pull all of that together into a program. So I think whilst funding is an issue, I think if we get the technical knowledge in there, there's a lot of things that people can be doing. Yes, funding for facilities and building weight rooms and other things, it is a challenge, and it's something that we, you know, we've been very resourceful. We've been fortunate that there was a bank of old equipment there already, but we were you know, we were confined to probably a 14 foot by 15 foot weight room to begin with. That was our free weights room, and the bigger gym room was set up with cardiovascular equipment, which at the end of my first year, I managed to convince them that we needed to swap those two over. And we crammed the CV kit in, and then we've been fortunate with sponsors, funding from our parent and friends association, that we've managed to pull some funding in to take a wall out and turn it into a larger gym, although we couldn't afford a professional fitting service. And myself and my boss ended up on our hands and knees laying flooring. You know, over the course of a week, we managed to put in place a facility that, you know, we can start to support a greater number of athletes. And I think if people are resourceful and they want things to happen, then, you know, it can happen. But sometimes you've got to get the buy-in by doing the, you know, the testing and the training and showing the value of this type of work to the people that matter and make decisions on how money's spent. And I think then you can, you know, I think everybody's got a chance of getting something implemented, because I don't think any school would turn down the opportunity to help their kids get some more positive outcomes in life.
This is a great segue into the final question of the podcast, which is really for those that are listening to this podcast and want to get involved. Either they're currently a PE teacher and they want some additional resources that may help them with the technical knowledge of how to build a strength program, or whether they're a SNC coach that wants to get involved either at a state school and wants to help build a similar program, you know, what recommendations would you have for them and what resources?
I think in terms of recommendations, is I don't think you can go too far wrong if you get yourself through, you know, the basic qualifications, whether that's the UKSCA or NSCA or, you know, I think there's a lot of, if you go to a good provider, a personal training qualification can give you a lot of the skills that are required to deliver and coach some of the stuff. I think the UKSCA would be the kind of gold standard in this country if they pursue those things. In terms of wanting to work in schools, I think approaching schools and offering time is that's how my time started out, just volunteering time and going in and getting that experience and helping people, you know, get better. That's certainly was my starting point, giving up an hour a week or so. It was actually at St. Peter's, you know, and here I am 8 years down the line where, you know, I'm fully employed there. So there's no reason why that can't happen for other people. In terms of other resources for working with younger athletes, I mean, there's some fantastic books out. Rodri Lloyd, John Oliver's textbook is a super text. There's some great chapters as well in the High Performance Training for Sport book by David Joyce and Dan Lewinden. They've got some stuff, great chapter from Dan Baker, looking at long-term strength and power development. There's a chapter in there again by Rodri Lloyd, but then there's also lots of good guys on Twitter. I mean, I've got some stuff on our website, the Proformance website, www.proformance.pro. We've also just launched a video from the LTAD conference that we ran back in April, which fortunate to have some great people come and present at various stages of the development pathway. So people can check that out on our website, and that's accessible from wherever they are in the world on video. It's basically a video on demand service, and there's a more detailed talk and some practical sessions and PowerPoint resources within that are based around the system that we've talked about this evening. And also, if people want to get in touch with me, they can either get in touch via Twitter or email, and I'm more than happy to share some ideas.
James, when I publish the podcast, which is actually coming out tomorrow, I'm going to make sure to link your website, your Twitter handle, and your email in the show notes. That way people can easily reach out to you, cool. And be able to network and talk with you.
Sweet.
So James, I was gonna say I really appreciate the time that you took evening to come on the podcast.
No worries. Thanks for the invitation. I hope it's some good information. Start talking sometimes and you just think, am I talking garbage? So hopefully there's something that people can take from it.
No, definitely. I appreciate it, James. Have a good evening.
No worries. You too. Cheers.
Thanks again for listening to another episode of the Historic Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed it, please head over to iTunes to leave a review and rating. It really helps others discover the show. Next week is going to be a great podcast with Coach Donnell Boucher down at the Citadel. He is their director of strength and conditioning. He mainly works with their American football team, but is responsible for all of the student athletes at the Citadel. He's in a unique situation because the Citadel is actually a military school, a state-run military school. So he has some unique environmental challenges. He's a very smart individual. Going to be covering a lot of ground next week. Hope you enjoyed that podcast and hope you enjoyed today's podcast. See you guys next week.